Welcome to the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Wright and Joris Peels. Hi, everyone. This is Joris Peels and the Orthotics and Prosthetics Podcast with Brent Wright. Hi, Brent. How are you doing?
Hey, Joris. Yeah, good to be on with you. This is going to be a fun one, huh?
Okay, I think so. Because okay, we don't have a guest, right? Which actually could be boring, but we decided not to have a guest this time because there's so much going on, right? So what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I really think we need to kind of piggyback on some of the stuff that you are talking about on your, what are you calling it? The unpeeled news?
Unpeeled? Yeah, 3D news unpeeled, yeah.
There we go. Yeah, so I think we kind of piggyback on some of that, but talk specifically about the prosthetic, some of the stuff that's happening in prosthetics and orthotics. So one is Hanger just announced that they're going to be taken private. And then also Össur buys out Naked Prosthetics. So I think things are newsworthy and something that we should dive into.
Okay, cool. So, all right. So, I'm more comfortable with the Össur thing because I know a little bit more about that. Össur is, there's a $400 million company, right? It's from Iceland, which is like, wow. I don't know many companies from Iceland. So, that's notable. And they bought 20 companies so far already that I saw a list of at one point. So, they're very acquisitive. And they seem to be doing, well, I don't know, what would you describe them as doing? I think, to me, they're together with, like, Alto Boca stuff. They're one of the larger companies in this industry, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that they've been very kind of generalist. They do a lot of things in the lower extremity prosthetic stuff. You know, they're known as some of the first people available in the prosthetic and orthotic realm for the carbon fiber feet starting very early on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I did not. Okay,
and so that's pretty neat.
Okay, and then the other thing I know about Naked is, well, first of all, I like the fact that it was started by somebody who actually suffered from finger loss, right? And so this is a person that started like solving their own problem and turned it into a company. I love that as a story. And it got started like, what was it, 2014 or 12 or something, like quite a while ago, and then and then grew through having, well, I don't know, they say more range of motion fingers using initially a Formlabs 3D printer and later on maybe some industrial equipment as well. And yeah, they essentially really were very cutting edge in these finger prosthetics, right? I mean, how would you look at that? I mean, differently than I do.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the neat things about Naked and what they've done is they have kind of turned the technology on the head using geometry and 3D printed metals combined with some 3D printed polymers. And we call it a body power prosthesis. So something that's powered by how you move your hand rather than something that is powered by a battery and sensors. And so that's why I think it's kind of a big deal. And the neat thing about body powered compared to, say, a battery or myoelectric prostheses is that it's a lot faster than what computers are. I mean, how quickly you move and the fingers move with you is so much faster than what you can get with some sort of electronic device. So I think
checking here, right? So body power, does it mean the actuation starts with the body or actually the force is coming from the body or both?
Both. Yeah. So both is, that's what's really neat about that.
Okay. And myoelectric is that there's an electric impulse starting from the body, and then the rest of the thing is like electronic or mechanical, right?
That's right. It goes through a computer. So, you know, it's battery powered, goes through a computer, receives some sort of signal, and then the terminal device does whatever from there.
Okay. And then the other, is there another variant? Or did we miss one, or is that it? Or?
So there are some hybrid ones that are very interesting in the sense that you might use some sort of body powered motion to create another motion that's translated digitally. So I think that's pretty neat.
Okay. Is it like Kinect watches or something?
That would be a pretty cool idea. Because
I have a mechanical watch, right? That works.
Right.
I just need to keep moving, right? For that to
right.
work. So, I don't know. They use it on regenerative braking as well. There's a lot of force when a person's weight comes down on a foot, you know?
Maybe, that's right.
Yeah, that could be used to be powered. But anyway, okay. So what do these guys do? So metal printing, well, they start off with Forum Labs, right? But you said they use metal printing and polymer. Like, how do you know any more about that? Or?
Yeah, so I believe the way they do the metal stuff is pretty interesting because these little articulations that go on top of the hand are custom angled and then custom fit for each device. And so that is one way that you get strength in a very small body, essentially. And then I believe they're using multi-jet fusion for a lot of their fingertip stuff. And then they're also combining that with some carbon fiber pre-preg stuff. So they really run the gamut for mm-hmm. types of production. Very innovative way to do things. So I'm excited for them. You know, I think, from my standpoint, it also gives Oser some credibility into this body powered partial hand market, where they have had some partial hand stuff, but it's usually bigger and bulky with the battery and sensors, and so you end up with this fairly clunky device. And while it's functional, it's still very big and bulky, and it has a battery. So mm-hmm. for them, it kind of rounds out their portfolio or their offerings into now they're able to say, hey, you can go down this road of body powered, mm-hmm. or you can go down this road of myoelectric and battery powered, and we're mm-hmm. able to provide both of them. And I think there's a lot of synergy in the ways that you get there. So scanning, mm-hmm. Creating the sockets, that sort of thing, you're able to build, and both avenues get better because of what both companies bring to the table.
But does this mean that from an orthotist perspective, I'll say that you're more likely to go with these guys because you have one vendor, you've got one system to work with, and you can go do both routes? Would it be more versatile for them, or cheaper, or something like that? Or
so I think it comes down to, you know, customer service and overall longevity. You know, creating these devices is so capital intensive. And I guarantee you that Naked has some things that either some product ideas that they've shelved or tabled just because they don't have the capital to invest in those ideas. Well, when you bring a company like Oser in, now all those ideas can potentially become products. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exciting. And the other thing that Naked brings that I don't think Oser has the experience in is some of the 3D printing side of things. I know Oser uses a lot of 3D printing for prototyping some of their, you know, small devices and that sort of thing, but not necessarily onto like true production products. And, mm-hmm. and so I think having that kind of know-how and knowledge of how to navigate some of that will also make Oser quite versatile.
Okay. All right. So that means, so that's why you think it's a good move for Oser, but like for patients, is this going to mean anything, or just do you think it'll just mean more devices?
So one of the benefits of working with a big company is they also have a massive advocacy group and insurance billing specialists and things like that. So I think it's a good move for both companies. And now if you're going after getting, say, authorization on one of these devices. So I'll just take you through the process real quick. So if somebody, say, loses their finger in some sort of a work accident, then they are able to go through their workers' compensation, which is just insurance for workers that have gotten hurt on the job. And there's a whole authorization process, and so Oser, not that it's difficult, but they can help you navigate, get the right wording and everything down, so you can present this insurance company everything they need to know of why they need to authorize this device. And they're mm-hmm. already, they've already been doing that for years and years and years on other devices. So I think it's a natural progression there. Now, for the other neat thing that OSA brings to the table is because they are a bigger company, they also have a network that's worldwide. And that will allow these types of products be available in other parts of the world without much struggle. So most of the time, people are going to have some sort of account with Oser because that's one of the normal places that you would buy pieces and parts to make a prosthesis. Well, it's just mm-hmm. a natural progression for them to have access to now the Naked Prosthetic and still be dealing with one company. So in a roundabout way, I say, in the end, yes, patients will benefit. I think there's going to be more products that come to market. And OSER will go to bat for you on getting the mm-hmm. justification, everything to get these prostheses on patients. So I think it's a good thing.
Okay. Cool. But just give me a little bit of an idea of this, because I don't understand this whole thing, because if we're looking at because it seems a lot like, is it so, well, the 3D printing or the orthotics and prosthetics market from a vendor perspective, let's say, seems to be really fragmented, right? It seems to be there's no giant companies in here. There's no billion-dollar companies in here, right? There's a Alta Bulk, Oser, a couple of other larger ones. But there's not one kind of Microsoft-y kind of size company in this industry, right?
Yeah, I mean, so there... that has gotten interesting as well, and maybe that's what we should have talked about as well. Maybe we can table that for another discussion. But there's a few companies that have distributors, and this idea of, hey, you have a distributor that may house an Oser, Ottobock, and a whole bunch of other products under one house, and then you buy the stuff from that distributor. It's a great way to go. In fact, the next company that we're talking about, Hanger Prosthetics and Orthotics, has a massive distribution network called SPS, or Southern Prosthetic Supply Company. And, with their acquisition, now you do have a player that's in that billion-dollar market. That's very interesting.
Okay. Well, we'll get there in a bit then. Okay. So from the OEM perspective, it's still quite fragmented. We know that the practitioners are really fragmented, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think because there's a lot of financial type investors that look at this and say this is really rapid, from a roll-up kind of strategy, you could either, make a giant kind of pearl opticians kind of chain of O&P, kind of a mech O&P, right? Mm-hmm. Or you would look at it and say, you know what, there's a real scope there to make a giant kind of orthotics and prosthetics company that has, all of the devices, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. And controlling your own vertical and including that in your distribution is very interesting. And I think Oser to some extent does that, because they have started dabbling into the patient care. So they have made some acquisition in private patient care offices. And so that's very interesting, because now you have this patient care that is also purchasing from a distributor that is also Oser, that's purchasing Oser products. So now you've got this money going through multiple hands, but it's all under one umbrella, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, because this limb loss thing, especially limb loss thing with is going to get bigger, right? We're going to get old people seeing living longer, being more active, wanting to be more active. They'll pay more, and it's going to increase because of stuff I think on the accidental side, we would expect it to get less, right? But middle income and lower income countries are going to be able to more afford these things, and we're going to get more limb loss, I think, due to diabetics and all the other stuff as well, right? So it's going to be a question of time before somebody looks at this. But do you think the innovation comes from these specialized things? Because what we see in orthopedics, for example, you mentioned the cost of developing devices is too much. Orthopedics, it's gigantic to develop these new devices. And we're really seeing that small companies innovate and the bigger ones kind of just sit back and wait for the small companies to get big enough,
No, I mean, I think that's true. I think one of the things that's very interesting is I think there is a push, like, yes, you're getting bought by a company. And obviously their rules, you know, are the rules, right? But it looks like Oser is going to kind of let them continue on the path that they've been on. And so I like that, from the fact that I think what that does is it leverages some of Oser's, you know, just tribal knowledge around the orthotic and prosthetic field, but then allows Naked to have access to some of that. And then in the same way, there's going to be some reciprocity there, but they are going to continue operating kind of independently. And I think that's also a good move. And I think you're seeing that a lot in some of these acquisitions is, hey, these big companies don't want to screw up the small innovative companies. And, you know, so many times you can see exactly what you're saying. These small innovative companies, they get gobbled up by a big company and then all of a sudden they're gone. And for this type of limb loss, and say, like, let's just say Oser was like, you know what, we want to get you and we want you to stay quiet, it would be a very much a detriment to the limb loss community to have this company completely off the table and not an option. So I think I really like how the idea of keeping them independent is important.
Okay. All right. And is it so that, like, is, like, for example, one area, because I tend to see more articles about kind of more upper body type stuff. Like, if we kind of tend to focus on fingers and arms and stuff, that just might be a bias or just a, you know, a coincidence by me or something, right?
Well, that's an interesting, I would say you are correct in that there is this kind of, I think I saw it, and I know they meant to do the pun, but the arms race, right? Yeah, so it's an arms race of who can get the best, you know, widget device out there. And the reality is that upper extremity prostheses make up a very small percentage of the overall prosthetic population. But one of the reasons why people play in this arm space is that a failure in upper extremity, while not convenient or whatever, is non, I don't want to say fatal, but it's if you have a prosthesis that breaks, somebody can get hurt because they're walking on these things every day. So if it breaks and they're walking, somebody can fall, break a hip, and the list goes on. When you have, say, an upper extremity device that fails, it just means that the function has ceased. Usually they're not climbing a you know, a rock face or walking on their hands or whatever it is. And so it's a whole lot easier to play in that space when you know that a failure doesn't mean somebody's going to get hurt. And so that's why you have companies like Enable and, you know, these nonprofit organizations, college groups and that sort of thing. Why they focus on the upper extremity is their liability exposure is negligible because if it doesn't work, hey, at least we tried. But when you do some sort of lower extremity something and it doesn't work and something fails, then
you fall.
There's a massive risk, massive liability risk for sure.
Okay. I hadn't considered that. It's super logical if you say it. So from an entrepreneurial point of view, especially in like United States and stuff, it might make sense. Or people say, oh, we have this innovation, let's do that first. And then they end up never getting to the other thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, and here's a crazy, and this is just a quick side note. I was speaking to, emailing with literally a billionaire software developer that's very well known in the non-O&P side of space. And I said, dude, your software is amazing. Your programmers are amazing. I really think that there's some sort of synergy in the prosthetic and orthotic realm as far as creating devices with what you know. And he just said, thank you, not interested in getting into the medical space, like the liability is too great. So what's bummer about all this is that you have somebody that is uber qualified and could make amazing devices, but instead they're like, you know what? It's not even worth it because we have such a big name. And when you have a big name and big dollars, that means also big liability and lawsuits. And I was like, man, that's a terrible way to live, but I totally get it and respect that. But that's a tough thing, knowing that your workforce could have the potential for good in specifically this O&P field, and you just can't do it because the liability is too great, or you're not interested in doing it because the liability is too great. That was a tough one, but I get it.
Okay. That's a weird way of looking at it, but it is a bit, it's a shame, really. I think that's a shame. Okay. And are there areas, I mean, we see this happening. We would expect more of these companies to have exits. I mean, I'm also not seeing a ton of VC activity in this industry as compared to things. Is finding a financing for these startups, is that, you think, more complicated?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at some of the stuff in the orthotic and prosthetic realm, while the stories are amazing, I think the margins are smaller than what people may think. So when you're talking like physical goods, instead of say a software or something like that, those margins start getting smaller. The multipliers start getting smaller. So obviously we don't know the number on this, but we saw that Naked last year did $9 million in sales. Roughly,
who was that?
Naked Prosthetics did roughly $9 million in sales. So I don't know what their multiplier was for getting bought out. But, you know, when you say, okay, $9 million in sales, you're like, well, that's, you know, it's a good amount, but it's not a lot. But then when you break it down, you know, you're typically looking anywhere between probably $5,000 to $8,000 per finger or digit. So I did some quick math, and you're looking at like between 1,000 and 1,500 fingers had to go out the door last year. And so you think every single one of those were custom made. There's a lot of time and energy that goes into each one. You involve metal printing, which, you know, is kind of the wild, wild west as far as expense and that sort of thing. Then you start looking at these margins, and you're like, well, $5,000 to $7,000. Yes, it sounds like a lot, but man, when you incorporate all that technology and that sort of thing, these margins start shrinking down.
And the numbers are super low, if you think about it that way.
Oh, yeah. And so it's like, what does that market look like? And so it's interesting. I don't think these companies are, and I could be totally off base, I have no inside knowledge of this one, but I don't think they're getting what some of these other software pharmaceutical companies or even 3D printing companies, right? Like the big ones that have gone from, you know, $15 down to 50 cent type of thing. That's not going to happen with these. This is real physical product with, you know, in real potential long-term growth, but this is not a turn and burn in 3 to 5 year type of thing.
Yeah. I'm so surprised. If you look at it, like, there's dental companies that are making like 10 million crowns a year, you know, with 3D printing. That's also all custom. But, you know, there are only is one material. The crown is a product, right? So there's not much other stuff going on. But still, yeah, if you look at the volume is not, you know, is not huge. You know, that doesn't even warrant having their own machine, you know?
Right.
That'd be crazy buying a machine. So yeah, that also means that, like, you know, the relevance for the 3D printing industry as a whole is also, you know, not really there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and you think about the size of fingers, you can tuck those in anywhere, but the cool thing is if you scale appropriately, the fact that you can tuck those things in anywhere also allows you to scale with, say, another metal company. That may have some other builds going on at the same time, and they can say, hey, over here, we'll put your stuff, and you get some scale there. So I think there's some neat things that can be done, especially with these smaller pieces, for sure.
Okay. All right. So you generally tend to look at this thing as a positive kind of development for the industry as a whole. This acquisition is good.
Well, yes, overall, I always hate to see these independent companies get bought out, and I hate to see that. So I would say the jury's out on this one as far as we don't know how it's how it's truly going to go. My hope is that it is a very constructive relationship where information goes both ways, and then the field gets better because of it. But I guess we'll time will tell.
Okay. All right. And by the way, while we're on this, I mean, is there an area where you're thinking, oh my God, somebody should jump into it? There's nothing happening in terms of startups or VC or investments or.
So I would say the VC stuff is difficult. I think if you're looking to get your money out, say even 5 years on a man, that's going to be tough out of some of these, out of this stuff. That's going to be, it's just a tough road. So I think that, there is some kind of philanthropic type VC type things that they're in it for the long haul and the greater good of our field. And I think that's where some of this makes sense. But if somebody's looking to make a quick buck, probably not the right industry to be in.
Okay. Well, that's a fair assessment. Okay, cool. So now let's talk about the second acquisition. What did this Hanger? So Hanger was, the only thing I know is that they're quite a considerable chain. I thought they were a chain, right? Or explain to me what they are.
It's kind of a chain, but they are publicly traded. They have 875, roughly 875 offices nationwide. So they're in every state. They're everywhere. And they had been on a little bit of a tear recently, buying up some independent practices and just expanding their footprint across the United States. I actually did my residency with Hanger. I think it's a great place to do the education side of things. And they have, just like anything else, they have a lot of resources that allow clinicians to become excellent clinicians. They have their own trade show internally. There's a lot of neat things that happen. But then on the same side of things, it's a very big company. And big companies are, the ships are hard to move. And so there are people that prefer not being under that sort of umbrella, and I can see it both ways. I've lived both ways, and there's definitely positives for Hanger, and then there would be some negatives. But it's just, I would say it's what your, as far as an employee side of things, what you're looking at to get out of it. But what's interesting about this is, it's called Patient Square Capital, and they say it's a patient-centered investment firm. So I'm guessing some VC money, and it was essentially a 30% premium on the stock price. So they were roughly worth, mid 900 million. And this company paid, I think, a little over 1.2 billion for it. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out for sure, because, coming off the stock exchange, I think what this will do, and you always look at it from the patient side of things, I think it's going to be good. There are so many things that are black and white to be on the stock exchange, to be publicly traded. And now being private, there are some things that you might be able to play with that you weren't able to play with because of a potential negative story or what have you, and then your shares just tank for no reason, really. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a little bit more flexibility with some innovation and things of that nature when it comes to this purchase. It'll be interesting to see their roadmap. I mean, to throw out an extra $300 to $400 million. On a premium. I mean, these people are going to want their money back someday, right? And so what does that look like? So I am sure there's going to be some stuff coming out in the near future of, hey, this is kind of the roadmap or I guess they don't have to tell anybody that. So maybe we'll just start seeing it, and you know, it'll be exciting to see. But I think one of the natural things that it allows Hanger to do is start looking at some of these the newer technologies out there to specifically an additive on how can they control their own vertical. They already have distribution and some manufacturing, but then how can they do that and continue to not only buy from themselves but drive the cost down, material cost, for providing a high quality prosthetic device. So I think there's a lot of room in there, and being private will allow them to explore those options.
Yeah, one of the most exciting, well, okay, so the VA in the US is really doing some amazing things under Beth Ripley and stuff, and they really are showing us what's possible. Like, one of the things they've done, well, okay, first off, one of the things they've done, they put a metal printer in a VA hospital, right? And that means they can make theoretically orthopedic implants for the VA, since they have such a large patient group. I think it's something like 9 million patients or something like this, mm-hmm. which would mean that this is a health system for US military veterans, but it's also a health system that is equal to some countries, you know, especially with the high costs in the US. And what they're doing is they're printing, well, they could develop medical devices using this, and they can also maybe make these compassionate use implants and stuff like this, really specialized stuff, right? So that's one thing they did. The second thing they just did is they got 510K approval for like a kind of a patient-specific implant kind of software, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this to me was like, just wait a minute. This is like a veterans health system that's getting its own like patient kind of specific implant planning software stuff. And they think they can do it better, and they think they're going to do it like cheaper than other people can do it. And that to me had a lot of implications, because in this sense, okay, so this planning software is used to plan complex surgeries. It's used to generate models that can be used to educate patients, models of different surgeries or pathologies that can be used for students, or to plan these complicated procedures to actually produce a unique 3D printed like solution. Now, the last thing is we're not doing that really that much. It's only happening with like people who are just like singular cases, kind of. The other stuff is happening quite extensively already. And to me, for this health system to go into the thing was something that I thought was very notable. At the same time, in New York, there's something called the Hospital for Special Surgery. Mm-hmm. And they are, I think, the largest hospital in the world for TCAS, or for total knee arthroplasty, and for just knee and hip implants generally. It's basically, they have, I don't want to look it up how much, but they're an incredibly big hospital, really specialized in orthopedics and orthopedic implants and stuff, and surgery for the lower body specifically. And of course, New York's a nice place to be then, of course. And they now have, courtesy of Decento, they have their own Arcam machines in the basement, essentially producing implants at the location of the hospital. So if we're looking at that's a lot more difficult and a lot more risky than making these prosthetics. Do you think that the Hanger could do something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've definitely got some options, and I think they've already got some stuff in the works. They have two big production facilities, one in Arizona and one in Florida, and mm-hmm. They're investing a lot of money in training, creating a workforce that makes these devices. And I think it's going to be a natural progression for them to move into 3D printing. You know, I think though, you know, with the orthopedic stuff, you know, yes, it's going to be a pretty good volume and it's internal, but you do have a little bit of a liability mitigation, because you're the US government. So I think that's interesting. Now, for somebody like Hanger, you know, they literally produce and make hundreds of sockets a day. So let's say if they all of a sudden decided they were 3D printing a socket on whatever medium and one fails, now they have a massive recall, because mm-hmm. hundreds of these are going out a day. And mm-hmm. so it becomes a massive, you know, financial issue mm-hmm. for them. And not only on reprinting the devices, but then you have clinical time on clinical and administrative time. Hey, Mr. Jones, hey, your prosthesis is part of a recall. We're going to have to get you in. So you've got administration people calling. Then you have the clinician people saying, hey, Mr. Jones, we're going to have to take this apart. We're going to have to put another one on you. So it's not just the cost of the device itself, but there's also a labor component that is put on that. And you multiply that by, you know, so let's say it went 2 weeks. You're talking about, you know, 4,000 appointments. It's a big chunk of money. And so they're going to have to look at how do we minimize the liability while progressing forward and while creating the workflow ideas. So when the time comes to 3D print a device that's a definitive device, we're super confident in letting it go out the door. I mean, that's just because of how big a company they are. You know, for us, we've been delivering prostheses since 2018 definitively, but we're not sending out hundreds a week. You know, we're sending out 5 to 10 a week. And so our exposure is definitely much less.
Okay. But does it mean, does Hanger do like centralized production? Is that what they're doing?
Yes. Or? Yeah. Oh yeah. So they have their own team. And in fact, you know, not only do they sell to themselves through their distribution, but they also sell to other companies, private companies. So that there's always an interesting discussion around that, because they indirectly will be able to get to see what kind of, if you use them, what kind of volume you do. And that might be play into part of their acquisition strategy as well. So, you know, not saying that that is happening. I'm just saying that is totally possible because they have access to that data. And how they choose to use it is kind of up to them. But yeah, so they use 2 or 3 centralized locations to produce many of their devices. And when you look at it, when you look at the numbers, so that if they have 875 clinics nationwide and their valuation before they got bought was like 950 million, you're really looking at each clinic really is only generating on average a little over $1 million a year. And so you're not talking about a massive scale. You're talking about admin and a practitioner or two. And, but you know, that across the whole country, it's kind of like having a McDonald's on every corner. You're not far from having a Hanger near you.
Okay. That's what I think that, so I think that's, I think the revenue kind of like is kind of nice. And then, so that also kind of does look at, that looks kind of like, that is actually kind of the revenue of an individual McDonald's franchise, by the way.
Well, there you go.
So that's actually kind of interesting to map it and look at that. But okay, so just a little bit about this production thing. They do centralized production, but did then they also, did they use stuff from Ulster and all these other guys, Alto Boca stuff, to incorporate that?
Well, I think that's one of the benefits of also going private is now you're able to take some of that and do it more behind the scenes. So, you know, when you've got 875 offices, you have negotiating power with a company like Össur or Ottobock. And you may say, hey, love using your, you know, whatever device. I want X percentage off. I have 875 people that can buy from you right now. I'll put it in my little catalog of like preferred things to order or whatever. You know, there's massive value to that. As well as not only do you get, does Hanger get a discount, but then you get, if you're Össur or Ottobock, you get a massive volume as well that comes along with a, you know, perceived discount. So I think that you're going to start seeing probably more of that. We're not going to hear about it, but there will be that ability to negotiate these deals that are very aggressive to help them lower their cost of goods sold.
No, I totally. I think it'll be, and they have more freedom to do that. They also have more freedom to make more long-term deals, you know? Maybe a deal that you know, doesn't generate that much savings in one go or all the time. You know, they have a, you know, their investment horizon. The numbers don't have to be as well massaged. They could just make wild swings because they do very high risk investments, you know. So I think that would be an advantage. I mean, if I would look at it from their point of view, the key thing to me is making all of the, say, the fitting equipment, so that everything from scan to producing the fit, right? For all prosthetic, that to me is a big cost center for them. And if they could just, you know, print all that liner kind of stuff that makes a prosthetic fit, that would be a huge gain for them, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think you make a good point. Like, so software is going to play a big role in that. Scanning is going to play a big role in that. You want to be consistent across the company on how you create these workflows, because if not, you're going to have variability, and variability across 875 clinics is just a complete disaster. So, so not only do you have to have the software, but then you have to have the training following your workflow process and that sort of thing. So there's a foundation that they really have an opportunity to build and build on. And so it'll be interesting, you know, and I think the other part of this, not that it's negative, but it's, there are a lot of hanger prosthetics and orthotics or hanger clinics that are next to each other or in the same sphere. So I'll be kind of curious, will there be consolidation along the clinics where if there was three clinics in a 50-mile radius, are they going to shrink it to one clinic in a 50-mile radius? And are all those people going to work together? Or are they going to say, hey, you know what, we're cutting this one away and, you know, we're going to, you know, maybe there's not an option for some of these employees. So it's still a very interesting time. All signs point to, if you're a prosthetist orthotist and you don't have a job, it's very easy to get a job because there's not enough people working in this industry. And so I don't think anybody has to worry about having a job. It's just a matter of who's it going to be with.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I think on this hanger thing, I think it could be really good if they work on the connective tissue, if you will, right? If they make a better liner, for example, or if they make like a better production technology generally to making these sockets and just making this all the kind of metal components and carbon fiber, if they do a lot of work in making automating prepreg or something, you know what I mean?
Yep.
That to me, that kind of process intensive stuff, they could really lower their costs considerably on the material, buying stuff in bulk, making their own inserts, all this kind of stuff. It could also be kind of they could also go an easy route, for example, outsource all the scanning to Costa Rica and all the other file handling to places further afield, which could be okay if they make the, you know, it's what Invisalign does as well, right? I mean, they don't have American, most of the patients are American, but most of the people looking at the files are in Costa Rica, right? So, you know, that kind of thing is an obvious thing to be done as well, right? I do the scan in the office, but then some dude half a world away does all the file handling, you know? And the production also happens in, I don't know, China or wherever, right? So that to me is also another obvious, I'm not entirely sure that would really bring, that might bring benefits to shareholders, not necessarily to the wider orthopedics world, you know? And the other thing is for them to make kind of knockoff versions of whatever these ulcer products or the AutoBulk products or these clips I like so much, these Bayo clips and stuff, you know, mm-hmm. It's them to knock off all the other stuff to make better versions of that. But that to me is much more difficult, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's so many, I think you're right, that where the value that they can bring is these processes and becoming efficient. The more efficient you are, the more money that you save through processes. I mean, I definitely see like creating your own product as a value, but further down the line, because there's so much white space in just how do we get from a scan to a final product for not a lot of money. There are so many ways that can be, you know, go there. And that's really the low hanging fruit that mm-hmm. you don't have to have a ton of dollars or investment or what have you to make that go. You just have to have a great process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, man. Hey, Brent, this is really nice. I really like this, dude. I really like just having a little chat with the two of us about the market. We should do this more often, man.
I think so, man. So, yeah, let's do it again. I can't wait.
All right. So thanks for being here, Brent. Thank you for listening. My name is Joris Peels. I was here with Brent Wright on the Prosthetics and Orthotics podcast. Thank you so much for being here with us today.